Listening to WBH Radio, I'm William Holly, and we're back at it with episode number 7. Finally got to episode number 7, after a 6.5 and a lost episode in there. Finally got to 7, man. Finally feel like we catching up. Today I wanted to get into a few things. First, last Sunday, Kobe Bean Bryant won himself an Oscar award. Now, first, let me go on record. I hate the fact that we judge our success by somebody else's approval. Oh, the Oscars came and gave us an award, so that means we did good. I don't subscribe to that. The Oscars, Grammys, they could keep their awards. But for the sake of this conversation, let's say that we agree the Oscars is the highest honor, okay? Let's go ahead with that. So Kobe, a 5-time NBA champion, somebody whose whole life is basketball, was able to switch fields. And not only switch fields, but win the highest honor. Now, you know, like I know, in this world, people try to put you in a box. They try to pigeonhole you, put labels on you. Well, where'd you go to school? What'd you study? Okay, well, you should only be able to do that. How old are you? Well, you shouldn't be able to do X, Y, and Z. Kobe said, nah, y'all not going to put me in a box. I'm breaking the mold. I could do basketball. I could do business. I could do film. So for him to be able to switch fields is truly impressive. I wasn't the biggest Kobe supporter as a basketball player, but yo, you got to salute that man. Kobe, congratulations to you. But, you know, it's no surprise when successful athletes like him are able to go on beyond the career we know them for, in Kobe's case, basketball, and tackle other fields. Because the same thing that made them successful on the field of play, which is dedication, hard work, the ability to sacrifice, the ability to never be satisfied, those attributes can translate anywhere. So it's no surprise when we see Michael Jordan doing great things in business. We see LeBron James and the things that he's been able to build outside of basketball. And now Kobe Bryant. And you got to understand, these guys are extremely competitive. And that doesn't stop once they retire. That does not stop. So when you're in a room, it's Kobe, it's Michael Jordan, it's LeBron, it's Magic. Everybody there got money. Everybody there got a sneaker contract. Everybody there got championships. So what's the next step to that competitive process? Well, y'all ain't got an Oscar. You know, so you got to understand, these guys are still competing. You know, you could pay for school, but you can't buy class. That Oscar, dang, you don't think LeBron got on the phone with his guys, Maverick Carter and Rich Paul, like, yo, Kobe got an Oscar, man. What we working on? Yo, when I was with the New York Yankees, they wanted to do like a Derek Jeter night every night. Derek Jeter said, yo, listen, y'all want to retire my number? Cool, I'll show up for that. But other than that, leave me alone. I'm not coming to Yankee Stadium. You know why? Because he's too busy pushing forward for the next challenge. He's too busy building a media platform where athletes can voice their opinion in the Players Tribune. He's too busy trying to be an owner. And you see he was able to get the Miami Marlins. He's too busy trying to impregnate this supermodel and his wife, Hannah Davis. These guys are not looking in the rear view. They keep pushing forward. Derek Jeter's like, y'all had me for 20 years, man. I'm on to the next one. So it was great to see Kobe be able to capture that Oscar. I wasn't even watching. I caught that on the late run when I seen it in the news and stuff. Like, man, that's truly impressive. That's truly impressive. Shout out to Kobe. Congratulations to him. But did you see afterwards, social media came after him for his sexual assault hiccup back in the day? Listen, no woman should be sexually assaulted. I know people close to me that have had to experience that. My sisters in arms in the military have had to deal with that. And it's not even about the physical pain they suffered. It's the mental anguish that stays with them for life. Every time they close their eyes, they have to deal with that. That's a sad place to be. And I want to support them in any way I can. But it's hard when that movement seems to pick and choose who they want to come after and when they want to come after them. Kobe Bryant's case was about 12, 15 years ago. Y'all should have been dragging him this whole time, if that's what you truly believed. But now he's shining on one of the biggest nights in Hollywood, probably one of the biggest nights of his career. And now y'all want to drag him? And I want to ask these women, like, what's the criteria? Are we going based off of just accusations? Are we going off of convictions? Because let's look at OJ. OJ was acquitted of murder, but you guys still want to call him a murderer. Okay. Mike Tyson, former heavyweight champion of the world, was convicted of rape. But he gets to do a Broadway show. People show up with their kids and hear him talk about getting gonorrhea and syphilis and this and that. Or he has a cartoon on the Cartoon Network. Like, the inconsistency is hard to back. It's hard to back. And these same people that came for Kobe Bryant, I want to ask, did they come for that Stanford swimmer when he was caught red-handed about to rape a woman? Because I remember women backing him and saying, you know what, that young man has a great life ahead of him. He shouldn't face too much jail time. Let's let him off leniency. Were you guys asking for the hammer then? I don't know. I'm just asking questions. I truly don't know. But I know it's hard to get behind a movement that is inconsistent. And there's really no criteria for who we're going after. Shout out to Kobe. But yo, I've been on this boxing thing lately. I've been working closely with a friend of mine, a young man by the name of Sessa Rainman Francis, making his Brooklyn boxing debut Saturday, March 10th at the King's Theater. He's currently 3-0 with 2 knockouts. And I've been staying close to his camp, just seeing how he works, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. The amount of sacrifice and discipline that he's putting on is truly motivating. I'm like, dang, I need to step my life up. I could always get a little bit more out of my day. These boxers are truly phenomenal. You don't notice it until you sit down in a restaurant with him and there's only about 2 healthy choices on the menu that he can eat because he got to make weight. Meanwhile, I'm like, yo, waiter, bring me the French fries with some extra ketchup too. So I've been working working closely with him, been in the gym with him, and there's a whole slew of young boxers on that same path. And one of those young boxers was set to fight Saturday night under the Deontay Wilder card. So I said, you know what, let me tune in and see this young man. They didn't end up showing the fight because he was one of the undercards that didn't get aired here on the on the East Coast. But my TV was still on when the Wilder fight came on. Now, I've never seen Wilder box before. I mean, I know about him just, of course, tuning into sports. and he is 40-0 with 39 knockouts. That's rather impressive. But I always felt like he was fighting bums. And again, this is just me as a casual viewer. So the TV was on, and I'm watching him Saturday night. And he is in a brawl with this dude named Luis Ortiz. Just a battle. So one of the best boxing matches I've seen in a long time. And he ended up winning with a TKO knockout in the 10th round. And I just remember walking away thoroughly impressed. Like, yo. Now, maybe it's because I've been in the boxing gym recently with my boy, but I just have an appreciation for these guys now. Yo, walking, going in the ring and fighting another man to make a living is difficult. And in that fight, Wilder took more punishment than he ever did in his career. Than his career. All of the analysts said so. And people may want to use that as a way to knock him down, like he lost a step. Nah. What I saw was a championship performance. That's what I came to see. You want to see when a dude has his back against the wall, against the ropes, how he comes out. And he came out swinging. And victorious. He was gassed. He was tired. But he still found something inside of him to win that bout. So, yo, next time Deontay Wilder's on, I'm tuning in. And shout out to his opponent, too, Luis Ortiz. No, there were no losers that night. Everybody could walk away with their head held high. Again, getting in that ring to fight another man to earn a living. If I told you right now, yo, I'm taking you to another neighborhood to fight somebody for your dinner tonight, you're going to be like, huh? And again, being around my homie Cesar and being in the gym with all these young kids, these young men trying to make a way in boxing, these are some of the best stories in athletics. A lot of these kids coming from nothing. Sleeping on their girl's couch, sleeping on their cousin's couch, just hoping for that payday. Dudes coming out of jail looking for redemption. Like, yo, the sport of boxing got some of the greatest stories out there, some of the greatest athletes out there. The sport needs to just get it together. Boxing used to be the best, the biggest thing in this country. But now it's just the wild, wild west because you got this federation, the WBO and the WBA, and there's a champion in every freaking country. It's splintered. It's fractured. If boxing had a centralized agency that kept everybody under one roof, kept everything together, it would be the biggest sport in the world. The reason the UFC is successful because, again, it's one league. Boxers can't run from each other. They can't dodge each other. Everybody's right here. And you got to fight the number one contender. There's no putting it off for years and that, you know? But, yo, I'm back on my boxing kick, man. Shout out to the sport of boxing. I want to ask you guys, if it's Game 7 of the World Series, Game 7 of the NBA Finals, the Super Bowl, or a big boxing match like Mayweather, McGregor, or Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson, if they all taking place on the same night, which one are you watching? I think I'm going with boxing, yo. I could DVR the rest of them. But the boxing spectacle is nothing like it. Nothing like it. You see these guys come out with the music and all type of uniforms. Deontay Wilder came out with a mask the other day. And with all the hoopla surrounding Mayweather and the money and the women, yo, at the end of the day, he got to get in that ring by himself. And there's something dangerous about that. And I think that's why boxing takes the nod. Boxing biggest stage is second to none. I truly believe second to none. But we do have the fight of the year, what should be the fight of the year, coming up Cinco de Mayo, May 5th. May 5th. Shout out to Mexican Independence. May 5th. Supposed to be Canelo Alvarez versus Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, the rematch. The first one ended in a draw. So we're looking to get a resolution this time around. But there was a little hiccup in the fight. Recently, Canelo Alvarez tested positive for steroids. Tested positive for steroids. It's a drug called clenbuterol. It's supposed to increase stamina, help you lose weight. And you know what he blamed it on? He blamed it on the Mexican beef. He's from Mexico and he's been training in Mexico. Now, what do y'all think? Do y'all believe him? Should this cancel the fight? Should the fight come to a halt because of this hiccup? What do I say? Hell no. Not only because I'm a fan and I want the fight to take place May 5th, but I believe Canelo Alvarez. I believe him. Okay, he was tested by a drug agency called VADA, Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. So first off, first part of it is, Canelo Alvarez and Triple G agreed to voluntary testing before this fight. So I don't see somebody signing up for voluntary testing and then getting caught. And if I have this correct, Canelo Alvarez pushed for the voluntary testing because everybody that fights Triple G wants him tested. You know why? Because that young man is a beast. They like, yo, no human being should pack that much power. So if you're going against Triple G, you want him tested. So I have this. So if I have this correct, Canelo Alvarez is the one that pushed for the testing. Not only that, but the agency VADA said the amounts of drugs found in Canelo Alvarez is consistent with the level you might see in somebody who may have consumed some of the Mexican meat. Just like trace amounts. And this is widely understood that the cows in Mexico, this happens. They do contain this hormone. And people say, yo, well, why don't Canelo just train in America? Damn, that's that Trump America. That's that dirty American belief that everything is better in America. Yo, Canelo's from Mexico, man. Everything he knows is all the people he knows and care about is in Mexico. If he want to train at home, that's his prerogative. Now, he does come to America to train, but that's in the last 6 weeks of the fight. We haven't approached the last couple of weeks. You know, May 5th is about 8-7 weeks away. So within the next 2 weeks, he probably would have went to America. So it makes sense that he was still down back home in his homeland in Mexico. And they say, yo, he's a millionaire, son. He should have better resources. Which I want him to import his own cow? Every restaurant he sits at, he has to trace the meat back. Yo, where'd you get this cow from? That's a lot to ask for him and his camp. And also, Max Kellerman from ESPN, boxing analyst, he pointed out that Canelo Alvarez is not a natural middleweight. He has to make a concerted effort to kind of bulk up and become a bigger fighter so he could compete with Triple G. So if he's not a natural middleweight, he wouldn't be looking to burn weight. He wouldn't be looking to lose weight. And that's what that drug, clenbuterol, does. It helps you lose weight. But that would be in conflict to what Canelo was trying to accomplish. So, yeah, I think it's a small little hiccup. But it should not stop the fight. And it should not taint Canelo Alvarez's career. Canelo was fighting grown men when he was 15 years old. That dude is a warrior. He's fearless. And I don't think he was trying to take any shortcuts. You could fine him, whatever the penalty is. But let's get back to business May 5th. I'll be watching. For sure. For sure. What else I got here? What else we got here? I got the Pittsburgh Steelers of the NFL just franchise tagged their star running back, Le'Veon Bell. Now, let's talk about the franchise tag for a minute. The franchise tag is a way for NFL teams to lock up a player for one season. You know, they might be on the fence of whether or not they want him long term, but the franchise tag gives them the ability to lock up that player for that season while they kind of figure out if they want them long term. Kirk Cousins, the quarterback for the Washington Redskins, he's been under the franchise tag for like the last 2 years, it seems. Now, the advantage to the player is once they're franchise tagged, they have to get paid, I believe it's within the top three of, it's like an average of the top three salaries at their positions. So you're going to be paid as one of the top in the league. But of course, the downside is that that's just a one-year deal. You're not locked up for any long-term money, any long-term security. So we can understand it from the Pittsburgh Steelers perspective. Hey, Le'Veon Bell is great. He's probably going to be great next year. Let's lock him up for that year. But if you're Le'Veon Bell and you've been one of the best players in the league, forget running back. He's one of the best offensive weapons in the league, whether it's rushing or receiving. If you've been the best for the last couple of years, you're probably saying, hey, man, like, I don't want to risk my health for just one season. Lock me up for a long-term deal. Give me 3, 4, 5-year deal. Not just one. Football is a brutal sport, man. Come on, throw me something. And that's exactly how Le'Veon is feeling. He's like, man, this franchise tag is too dangerous. It's too dangerous. I need a long-term deal. I'm worth it. And right now he's threatening to sit out the 2018 season or retire. Basically saying, you know what, Pittsburgh Steelers? Your franchise tag is not worth it, man. I'm going home. And guess what? I'm right behind them. Le'Veon, if that's what you want to do, I'm with you. Because with the franchise tag, he would make $14.5 million this year. And I see fans saying, yo, man, he should be happy with that $14.5 million. I'd kill to play the game I love for that price. But it ain't about that, man. It's about being compensated based on what you're worth. Le'Veon, what's $14 million when you're worth about $50? What's $14 million when you probably worth $50, $60, $70, $80, $90? No exaggeration. So the Steelers could take that $14 million and shove it up their ass. But Le'Veon, you gotta be willing to sacrifice and do that. See, last year, the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise, Le'Veon Bell, he threatened to sit out. He threatened to retire. And guess what? In the 25th hour, right before the season started, his ass showed up. Nah, dog. You got to exercise your leverage. You got to show them you mean business. They not just going to give it to you. They not just going to give you the long-term deal. So you appeared mighty weak last year when you showed up. They called your bluff and you lost. So fast forward to this year. Here we are again in the same situation. Le'Veon, what you going to do? It ain't about race. This is about business. Labor versus management. Management drew their line in the sand and said, hey, man, we give you the franchise. That's what we are able to do under the collective bargaining agreement. Now, Le'Veon, the ball's in your court. What you going to do? And I say, yo, you got to show them you mean business. You got to sit out. You got to miss games. You got to be willing to play hardball. It's not about the fans. It's not about the organization. It's not even about your teammates. Because 5, 6, 7 years from now, when your career is over, ain't none of them going to help you feed your family. I promise you. It's up to you. On your very team, your teammate, Ryan Shazier, last year was hurt on the field. And they're not even sure if that man is going to walk again. So you need to make sure you're taken care of. And if that means missing the season and waiting until you could be a free agent and another team scoop you up a year after, that's just what you're going to have to do. Because I said this many times before, the opposition is not just going to hand it to you. And in this case, the opposition is the Pittsburgh Steelers front office. They made their move. Here you go, franchise tag. Now it's time for you to make yours. And if you are not financially prepared to sit out a year, that's on you, brother. If you got to come back to the organization with your tail between your legs and take that franchise tag, that's on you. And that's a damn shame. Because I got this thing, man. We always prepare for war. You should always be prepared for war. You should always have a stash box so in case you got to escape or a situation like this comes up where you want to tell an organization, yo, screw your franchise tag, you got to be ready. Don't cave this time around. I want to tell you a story. When I was in the military, I used to get in a lot of trouble for talking back, just being unruly at times. And some of the punishments in the military is they can give you extra duty. You know, while everybody else is home and chilling, they'll give you extra duty. And another part is they will take your money. They will take your money. They will fine you. Take it out of your paycheck. So that happened to me a couple times. So you know what I did? They have with the paychecks, you could set up an allotment on your paycheck. And when you set up that allotment, that money is untouchable. You know, that allotment could be for child support. That allotment could be for your car payment or whatever it was. So I would set up an allotment on my paycheck, like 90% of my check. I would have it directed to another banking account. So when they did punish me, when they did take my money, they were only going to be able to get a little piece at a time. So if they were looking to take hundreds of dollars from me, y'all could probably only get $10 a month for the next 5 years if y'all want. That was me being prepared for war. Like, yo, it's cool, but I know at any time it could pop off. I could be in trouble. We could be at each other's throats. So y'all not going to catch me slipping. So Le'Veon, please don't cave, brother. Don't cave. Black Panther still killing the movie scene or what? I remember a movie just being on fire like this was The Dark Knight. You know, partly because it was a great movie. Secondly, because one of the stars, Heath Ledger, had lost his life filming the movie, getting into such a character for to play Joker. And one of the themes of that movie was, it said it was Dark Knight feeling. You can die and be a hero, or live long enough to see yourself become a villain. So let's think about that. Like when you first show up, everybody's excited, or the new guy. But then eventually if you stick around long enough, they end up hating you. Right? See, when the new rapper comes on the scene, oh, he's cool, man. It's nice and trendy to be first to the new rapper. But once you see him around for a while, he's underrated. The same sword they knight you, they're going to good knight you with. The same sword they'll crown you with, you know, that they'll slit your throat with. So I was thinking of that recently when I see all the stuff that's going around with Mark Cuban, owner for the Dallas Mavericks. You know, we spoke about him recently. But in the like about 10 days ago, there was reports that there was a lot of sexual assault going on in his organization. Okay. But his name really wasn't caught in it. He was just in trouble because he is, again, at the head of the organization. But recently, a few days ago, it came out that he was the subject of sexual assault himself back in 2011. I'm thinking, damn, remember when he was the young, hip NBA owner that sat courtside with T-shirts and he hung out with players? And now look at him. He's a pariah, and they talking about getting him the hell out of here. Dark Knight feeling, die and be a hero, or live long enough to see yourself become a villain. And not only that, Mark Cuban has the show Shark Tank with him and his buddies, about four of them. They sit up there, and they're real supposed to be virtuosos in business. But it came out that One of the businesses that they rejected on that show was recently acquired by Amazon for $1 billion. So hold on, all of you brainiacs up there, y'all let a $1 billion business walk out the door? Yo, Mark, what the hell's going on? I thought you was that guy. I thought you classified yourself as, you're a businessman, I'm smart, I got it figured out. He was peddling all type of apps and just letting the world know he was smarter than the rest of them. And now, man, look, it's all coming down. And when they asked Mark about the company being acquired for $1 billion, he said, oh, yeah, yeah, well, I still would have passed. Really, dude? Really? You would still let $1 billion walk out the door, knowing what you know now. I tell y'all, man, y'all be giving these rich folks too much credit. Too much credit. And not only that, Mark Cuban passed on the opportunity to invest in Uber. So he done dropped the ball a few times. Yo, NBA, get him the hell out of here, man. There's a line of billionaires that can run an NBA team. Looking to get in the NBA. There should be like a time limit on how long these guys can own an NBA franchise. They're not that impressive. Mark Cuban, you was once the cool dude. Now I see you on TV every other day backpedaling and apologizing, all humble. Stop praising these guys on the front end. I'm going to get into the NBA a little bit more, but at first I wanted to before we went to the NBA, talk about a young man by the name of Shaquem Griffin. Now, I became aware of this dude when I was listening to my favorite show on ESPN, the Dan Le Batard Show. Shaquem Griffin is he was a college football player at the University of Central Florida. And what's most amazing about him is that he only has one hand. Yes, he played high-level Division I football with one hand. Now, when he was younger, he was born with a deformity, like his fingers didn't form completely. And for whatever reason, it was very painful for him. So at 4 years old, his mother caught him in the kitchen trying to cut his hand off. Trying to amputate his own hand. That's how painful it was. At 4 years old, he took a kitchen knife and said, yo, get this off of me. Luckily, his mother caught him. She scheduled the amputation shortly after. And he's been fine ever since. Been fine ever since. He has a twin brother, Shaquille Griffin, who plays for the Seattle Seahawks. So Shaquille was just a regular kid making his way up. He had a great career at UCF. And now he's in the NFL Combine. The NFL Combine is like, you know, freaking meat market where they go and measure the kids and put them through all type of obstacle course and everything. Now, initially, the NFL didn't invite him. For what reason? Only God knows. NFL does dumb shit all the time. But eventually, he got the invite, and he's in Indianapolis right now showing out. Showing out. He's checking the box in every obstacle course, every event, whether it's the 40-yard dash, it's the shuttle drill. And most recently, he did the bench press. Now, he had never, I forget the weight, but he said he had never benched more than 11 reps. That day at the combine, he did 25. And you got to check the video because how he did it, they put a prosthetic, prosthetic hand over his arm. So he had two hands so he could push the bench press up. Yo, I don't even get into all that feel-good stuff, but, son, you can't deny that. The perseverance, the guts, the heart, that's real, man. That's the type of stuff they make Disney movies about. If you're an NFL team, you got to find a spot on your roster for that dude. I'm going to tell you why. Even if physically, you know, he's not as talented as the other guys, having him in the locker room puts things in perspective for a lot of players. And I really believe in the mental part of the game. If you're in your locker room and you complaining about, dang, man, because I've seen this in professional locker rooms. Yo, we got to travel again. Yo, son, the steak and shrimp wasn't the greatest today. Or my 5-star hotel was only 4.75 stars. I've seen those complaints. But if you look to your left and you see a teammate with only one hand, and he out there making it happen, fighting for his spot, producing, that puts that in perspective. Like, you know what? Whatever I was complaining about wasn't worth it. Because look at the challenges my teammate has to go through and he's still here. That presence in the locker room can help your team go to the next level. I'm sure somebody will find a spot for him. The Patriots, somebody. That inspiration could take you over the top, be the difference between you guys winning the game and not. That's like a real-life Rudy or what was that movie with Cuba Gooding Jr.? I forget. But stuff like that brings a spirit in the locker room that you can't measure on a stat sheet. My man, check it out. My man is doing a bench press with an artificial hand. Shaquem Griffin. But, yeah, let me jump back in this NBA. See if I could get somebody on the phone to help me out with the NBA because I've been completely kind of disgusted with it. I don't know, man. Like, the ball ain't the same. I don't want to sound like a grumpy old man, but goddamn it ain't the same. I can't put my finger on it. But it seemed like everybody's just middle of the pack just getting by. Nobody is really displaying greatness and excellence. But I'm most disappointed in the Eastern Conference. I mean, nobody can get it together. You got the Raptors at the top of the Eastern Conference right now. What happened to the Hornets, Kemba Walker, Dwight Howard? What happened to the 76ers with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons? Everybody just middle of the pack. Just getting by. So I every week I'm going to just point out somebody who's really getting on my nerves. And this week is the Detroit Pistons. Now, before I get into what the Detroit Pistons have done this year, I want to talk about something that I had a problem with in 2014 when they signed this dude. Their current head coach is Stan Van Gundy. Not only is he the head coach, but he's kind of like the president of basketball operations. Basically, the owner of the Detroit Pistons said, "Here, Stan Van Gundy, you got the keys to the whole thing." And I'm asking, yo, what the hell did Stan Van Gundy do to earn that? I asked that the first day he was hired. Stan Van Gundy used to coach the Miami Heat when Shaquille O'Neal and D-Wade was there. Shaquille O'Neal walked upstairs to Pat Riley, who was the president, and said, "Yo, Stan Van Gundy, he ain't getting it done. Get him out of here." And Stan Van Gundy got booted. Then he went to the Orlando Magic, decent times with Dwight Howard. But again, nothing came of it. He was out of there. Then he sat out of the NBA for 2 years, 2012 to 2014, and then the Detroit Pistons come knocking on his door. For what? He wasn't even a broadcaster like his brother, Jeff Van Gundy. He was just at the crib doing nothing. The Detroit Pistons had just got rid of Joe Dumars, who was their president of basketball operations. Joe Dumars is a Hall of Fame player. He brought the Detroit Pistons 2 championships as a player and also 1 as an executive, the first black general manager to do so in the NBA. His Detroit Pistons have been in 6 consecutive finals. But that team was going in a different direction. Hey, they chose to let Joe Dumars go. That's fine. No problem with that. But nothing on Stan Van Gundy's resume warranted him getting the keys to the franchise. And one last nugget on Joe Dumars. Michael Jordan said that's the hardest person he ever had to guard. So just to put in context who they let go. But Stan Van Gundy, so when he got booted from the Miami Heat, Shaquille O'Neal called him the master of panic. And if you ever see Stan Van Gundy on the sideline, that's exactly who he is. Every time something happens, no matter how minute it is or how big it is, his reaction is the same. That's not leadership. That's not somebody you give the franchise to. Yo, when I was in the military, if we had a convoy of 10 trucks and one of the trucks gets hit with a missile and it's upside down and soldiers are hurt, when I look over my shoulder and I see my leader, I don't want to see him panicking. I want to see confidence. I want to see somebody that's going to get us back to safety. Somebody I could put my trust in. Stan Van Gundy has never exuded leadership. Never. Yo, all jokes aside, check out his wardrobe. Yo, you making millions of dollars and you can't get a tailor? Like, he shows up to games with like a polo shirt with a sport coat. Dog, the NBA is the flyest league. How you gonna get people to follow you when you don't even look the part? You don't even sound the part. Let's take a look at NBA leaders in the past. Pat Riley. Pat Riley, about 70 years old, still fresh to death. Armani suits, goatee, sharp, hair slick back. Phil Jackson did his thing on the bench, suited up, tie. There's no reason Stan Van Gundy should be at the helm of the Detroit Pistons. And I'm not even basing that off the year they had this year. He's not a leader. He's not a winner. And he dresses like a slob. But it's not all on the coaches. You know, I believe players play. Players play. And their franchise player, somebody they just gave a max contract to, their center, Andre Drummond, is not getting it done. Let me talk to you about the basketball I grew up on. The basketball I grew up on, the summer was a big part of who you were as a basketball player. You know why? Because the summer is where you got better. The summer is where you locked yourself in a hot-ass gym by yourself and worked on your deficiencies. Summer is when you say, you know what? I'm going to put the ball in my left hand for the next 3 months and get better. Summer is when you say, you know what? I'm going to shoot 100 shots from each spot. I'm going to shoot 1,000 free throws. Not today's summer where these kids just run around playing 50 AAU tournaments. No. This is, summer is where you worked on your craft, and then the next time the public seen you, they was like, damn, son. When'd you add that to your game? We seen it with Magic. We seen it with Michael Jordan. We seen it with Kobe Bryant. Every year they came back with a new tool to their arsenal. We seen them do things to their body. We seen Kobe put on weight. Seen him go back slim. We seen Michael Jordan bulk up. Andre Drummond is the same player we saw when he was 16 years old on the AAU circuit. The same player. Andre Drummond is the same player we saw when he was 18 at the University of Connecticut. He has yet to improve. His body looks the same as well. Dog, you've been in the league for 5 years. You ain't get better yet? You haven't gotten stronger with your post moves? No. You haven't gotten better at the free throw line? No. And this is the kid that was claiming, yo, I should be an all-star. What does he bring to the court? Now, people will say, well, I mean, he's a rebounder. Let's talk about that for a minute. Because that is his best skill, doesn't mean he's actually good at it. Do you follow? Because rebounding is the least mediocre of all his mediocre talents, doesn't mean he's one of the best at it in the league. I don't even really like to talk stats here, but I said, you know what? Let me look up somebody who was truly a specialist at rebounding, Dennis Rodman. Let me look him up. Dennis Rodman would give you 18 rebounds one season, 18 rebounds one season, 17, 16, 16, 15. Dennis Rodman averaged 14 rebounds in the NBA at 38 years old. Andre Drummond's best year prior to this season was 14 rebounds a game. That's not a specialist. That's not a good rebounder. That's just rebounding being his best quality, so we say he's a good rebounder. No. It's just the least mediocre of all his mediocre skills. Yo, in basketball, it's about, I forget the stats, man. It's about one or two things. Are you the difference in your team winning the game or not? That's it. And in 5 years, I can't remember Andre Drummond being the difference between his team winning or not. Basketball is about when you take the team, when you take the floor, does your team have an advantage at that position? When your teammates and your coaches look up the line, do they say, oh, all right, we're going to win that battle? Or are they back there scratching their head like, damn, son, I wish I had a Joel Embiid. I wish I had a DeAndre Jordan. I wish I had a Kristaps Porzingis. I wish I had an Anthony Davis. I wish I had a Marc Gasol. Andre Drummond don't outplay anybody in front of him, ever. Yo, this year, the Philadelphia 76ers center, Joel Embiid, called Drummond out, went at his head. So back in October, Embiid said prior to the game, he said, yo, I've been watching footage, and Andre Drummond don't play any defense. Guess what? That night, Joel Embiid lit his ass up, 30 points and 9 rebounds, and walked away with the victory. Joel Embiid poked fun at him on Twitter, and Andre Drummond, in true millennial fashion, he responded, yo, see you December 2nd. That was the next time they were going to play against each other. What happened on December 2nd, you ask? Joel Embiid lit his ass up again, 25-10, with the W. What happened, Andre Drummond? You said you was going to see him December 2nd, and then what happened? Nothing. But, yo, he making $22 million a year. God bless him, man. I'm going to see if I can get somebody on the phone. Talk some more NBA, because I'm done with this league, man. Call me in June. So I got my man Fenton here on the phone. Fent, what's good?
What's going on, man? It's a great day, man. Mr. Snowstorm. What we got?
Yo, I needed some help with this NBA, man. I'm kind of fed up with the league. Like, nothing really is grabbing my attention. Everybody's just middle of the pack. What are you following with the NBA? What are you really paying attention to? What sticks out to you right now?
It's an arms race right now, man. I mean, the West is loaded up for the final push for the playoff run, and the East is just trugging along. This is primetime basketball, man. How did that not get your attention? Well, you need a fight on the court.
I mean, the Rockets have their win streak going, but outside of that, who should I be tuning in to see?
Well, just based on the numbers alone, Toronto and Boston, they're not just ahead in the East and winning the East, so they're going to be the top two teams in the East, but they're performing like the best teams in the league right now. Honestly, they're five top-tier teams in the league right now that should essentially have a chance to possibly win a championship. Toronto, Boston, the Rockets,
and
the Golden State Warriors.
Son, see, hold on.
I said five teams. Hold on. Let me finish. I said five teams, and I mentioned four. And the team that you thought that I might have mentioned first was the Cavaliers with LeBron James, but I just can't count them out. I don't want to put him in the top five teams, but I can't count them out because he is LeBron James, and when it matters most, he's going to show up in the playoffs. So that's why he's the hanging on thread as my number five team to look out for in the playoffs.
Hold on. See, this is my frustration with the league, and right now my frustration with you. You are going to try and convince me that the Raptors have a chance of winning the championship. Like, no.
The Raptors don't ever essentially really have a chance because they're the Raptors. They're like that little brother. They always come to fight. You always beat them up, send them home, dust them off. All right. You had your shot. Now go home. You had a good day. But they always come back ready for a fight. Like they're like Rocky, man. He can take a punch, man. But he's always in the fight. I don't know what to say. They're a good team. They're really impressive right now. But I honestly don't believe they have a chance. But who knows, man? Maybe they do. Maybe they surprise us this year. You know?
They must be
shock
one of
the world.
They must be one of them late Rocky movies when he was like an alcoholic and all beat up. But listen, I was just railing against one of the biggest disappointments to me in the league, which is the Detroit Pistons. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, Andre Drummond still hasn't put any skills together. Fed, let me ask you, who has been the biggest disappointment this season?
The biggest disappointment this season?
I mean, I expected more from the Hornets with Kemba and Dwight.
Nah, that was meant to fail, man. Michael don't know nothing to do with basketball if he's not playing himself. He can't put a team together. My biggest disappointment are the Knicks. And you're right, the Knicks. What the Knicks got to do with anything? They're never relatively any good. They started off this year lightning fast, super hot. They were beating good teams, and they were playing really good. And their young star talent was in the top five players, playing like the top five players in the league, Kristaps Porzingis. He was playing like an MVP. Unfortunately, that team wasn't built to sustain him being injured and him being out because the team was put together by a crazy old person, Phil Jackson, former great coach, but terrible GM, probably the worst in GM history.
Nah, I'm going to give him a pass because Kristaps Porzingis went out. They were still competing. But I want to ask you, I was going to bring up the Knicks. This dude, Trey Burke, has been kicking up dust. The Knicks picked him up from the G League. I mean, is he a keeper? Is he a professional player? Is he somebody that we could look forward to sticking around for a couple years?
Trey Burke has always been good, man. Where you been?
He's a
solid player. He hasn't materialized into the player that maybe he could have been or should have been, but he's always been a solid player. Even when he was in college, like he was a solid player. He hasn't performed to the level of his draft status, but you know, I don't. He's always been a good guard, and the Knicks needed a good guard because that draft picking up. I can't even say the dude's last name, Frank.
Frank the Bum.
He's a bum. Get him out of here. But Trey went to draft it in Utah. He was doing his thing. He was playing pretty good. I don't know what happened over there. Utah just gave up on him, but
We'll see. But, yeah, I want to commend Commissioner Adam Silver. Whether you agree with his methods or not, he is somebody that's always willing to tackle tough conversations and at least have a discussion about it. You know, people always point out problems. He's trying to find solutions. So in recent news with the NCAA scandals and players and families and schools getting caught up, he's talking about kind of swooping in and the NBA having a relationship with these high school players early on in their career, kind of acting as a mentor and helping them to guide them through the process. What do you think about the NBA mixing it up with high school players?
Well, the NBA has been doing this already. They've been doing it at a small clip on the state side, but overseas they have like a soccer style developmental league where you pick up kids from 14, 15 years old. They have a really big one in Australia and they have one in China and India. So the NBA has been doing this to a certain degree. It's just not publicized because it's not taking place here in the States. So what they want to do is not really get hands on with these young kids. They're trying to, you know, have camps in the summer, have leagues in the summer where NBA officials and NBA scouts and representatives from teams could have a look at them playing against competition, higher level competition than they're playing right now. So in the event that they're ready to move forward to the league at a possible 18 years old, instead of wasting time being a one-and-done student in college, they might just go straight to the G League. They're talking about boosting the G League salary at a minimum $100,000 or something around that nature for it to be more attractive to these young players to play in the G League opposed to doing something like going straight overseas or, you know, taking bribe money from a recruiter or a scout or a sneaker company to go play in college for 1 year. So I like the move, but I don't think it's being executed just right.
Well, my understanding is that they didn't really have a plan in place. They just talking about it. And what I thought they were going to try to do was kind of just guide people through the college process. I didn't know it was really focused on bringing them to the G League.
No. They're trying to do much bigger things than that. But I think my solution would be, it's kind of more drastic, but I think it fixes everything. It's going to upset a lot of people, especially universities. It's going to really upset AAU basketball. They're going to be not pleased at all. But I think the NBA should set up a development league like MLB's minor leagues and to set up a minor league affiliate for each team and they have expanded rosters, and they play maybe two seasons in 1 year, not one season, 82 games, but break it up into two seasons, and they have these young kids, they do the basketball, but also they're doing college-level courses. It's stuff like finance and things of that nature that what they're going to need if they eventually make it to the pros. So they're not just a young kid with no education and no knowledge of how the business side works. Also, you know, so they're not hopeless. So yeah, they develop their talent as a player, but if you don't develop them as a person, you're going to get these immature kids making millions and millions of dollars, and something's going to go wrong. That's like putting fire to gasoline. It's just going to explode, man. So I think they should set up a developmental league and have them doing some type of coursework where they're actually that could possibly transfer. Maybe some type of online degree where they have to maintain that, but take a certain business level curriculum where they actually learn a business, because the NBA is a business, it's for profit. So they should do something like that, where they have the G League, develop the players, give them that two-way contract for the top players, and, you know, have them in school and still in some type of education in them, because if the 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, man, you don't know nothing about this world. Like, what you knew in the world at 18, 19 years old, if you didn't, you know what I mean? Life is hard, man. I'm learning stuff every single day. And I'm 30 years old, you know?
Gotcha. All right, man. Thank you, man. Catch you next time.
Yeah.
Yo, that's episode number 7. I'm your host, William Holly. Catch me on Twitter and on Instagram at WBH Radio. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. I'm out.